I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Stories Podcast. I am your host, James Johnson, and I am joined here by my new co-host, Ruth Goldstein.
Hey there.
That is a lot less swearing than I had anticipated. I'm glad.
Hey there, f***ers.
There you go. See, in the rehearsing, it was always swearing, so I was concerned. I was throwing off our entire vibe. You can listen to all previous episodes of the NC Theater Stories podcast at nctheaterstories.com. Theater spelled with an E-R, because that's how we roll. I should point out, for those very, very confused right now, I am not Lynn Pryor. That is one of my defining features. When I first came to terms with the fact that I wasn't Lynn Pryor, I was very young. But those who've listened to previous episodes know that this is a podcast that was created by Lynn Pryor, who is the former artistic director of the Gilbert Theater. I said it in the French way, Gilbert. Gilbert Theater, and he had ended the podcast with the last episode. Well, technically, he ended the podcast with the episode before the last episode, and then he was like, "Let's do a bonus," because you know he's wacky. Anyway, he had said to me that he had an interest in seeing the podcast continue, even though he was moving to Vermont, and voiced an interest in me just continuing it and doing, you know, reviews for shows and interviewing some people, and that's what we're doing. And I asked Ruth here to come help me out, because she has got a great personality, and I owed her money, and this is my only way of paying her back. So we're going to get right into it. The first thing that I wanted to get out of the way is we hadn't done this previously. We only did interviews on this, but we're going to do a review. Later in the show, we will have an interview. I recorded an interview earlier with Brian Adam Klein, who is the director for the Vagina Monologues. Ruth knows a little about that show. She's Vagina Monologues, yeah.
I have one.
Yeah, so
I grew it myself. Au natural, bitches.
I mean, you know, I'm just going to take her word for it. I assume she has one because
you
she tells
see it?
Me. Yeah.
No, that's not this type of podcast, is it?
It can become that kind of podcast real fast.
Nah, I'm good. I don't want the security guard to catch us.
Okay. the security guard thing, that should be explained that we are recording this from the campus of FTCC, because that's where we could do it. We were scrambling for a place, and we just happen to both be here because we are involved with a show that's coming up June 17th called Stage Kiss, and
lots of kissing!
Yes, lots of kissing, some butt stuff. I'm doing a review. We have a interview with Brian from Vagina Monologues later, and I'm doing a review right now. I'm going to review the Cape Fear Regional Theater's raunchy new musical, Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Dun dun dun.
I don't know why I made it sound sinister. It's not sinister.
Yet.
Yeah, I can put the sound effects in later. Though I like the
mine was
you
very
going
realistic.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, I'm very good at that.
She's
so good at so many things.
We
should talk about that one day.
Alright, so I saw Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Ruth has not seen it. She's very unfamiliar with the show. She's only ever attended maybe one play in her life. She's never seen a television. She's never read a book. I found
They're
her.
They're gonna think I'm 90.
I found her under a bridge, and
I used to live that troll life.
She's living that troll life. And
used to. Yeah.
And you know, after she asked me three questions before I could cross this bridge, I asked her one question. I said, Ruth, do you host a podcast with me? And then she rubbed her chin with her claw, and she thought carefully. And finally she said, sure, only if we can record it under the bridge. And I said, the deal. Done. We're doing this. And then she had her agent contact me, and there was a whole bunch of other, like, you know, things I had to...
I don't even know why it escalated to this level. Let's just talk about the show.
The show, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, written by John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask. Hedwig is unique to the CFRT in many ways that go beyond the subject matter, which I'll get into that in a minute. For one, Hedwig is only running for 2 weekends. That means the end the shows will stop running on June 5th, which means if you're listening to this and you haven't already gotten tickets...
You're screwed.
No, you can get them. Run, get them. Just, you know, just...
Run, don't walk.
Yeah, run, don't walk.
Not cross, go. How's that go? Don't collect $200?
Yeah, she's never played
board games
before.
I haven't seen that
movie. What movie? What is that? Monopoly, the movie?
Yeah.
Was James Dean in that? I feel like he could make it right, Mr. Moneybags. That's an inside joke. Anyway, for one, Hedwig is only running for 2 weekends, and weirdly enough, Hedwig had to share its run with Ring of Fire, The Music of Johnny Cash, which is a jukebox musical that I had considered doing a review for, and then I remembered I hate jukebox musicals, just with a passion. Like, there's Shia LaBeouf, I guess Hitler... And then
Hitler's
jukebox.
In this movie?
No. Oh. On my list of things I hate, I'm not fond of Hitler. He owes me money.
I know how you feel about Hitler. It's okay.
But I do not care for jukebox musicals. I feel like it's like paying extra money to see a cover band. And I'm sure this was a great show. I mean, I understand a lot of people who were involved with it were really talented. And I just have no interest in... seeing a jukebox musical.
But you saw this show.
But I saw this show. Man, I get off track.
He digresses.
I digress.
It's his motto.
And this show is amazing and the exact opposite of the Johnny Cash show, which is weird when to refer to Johnny Cash as family-friendly, but compared to this, yeah. Hedwig is the tragic rock musical about a fictitious, struggling trans rock musician from East Germany. That sounds like I'm saying they're transitioning from rock. They are a transgendered person who is from East Germany named Hedwig, who came to America after being seduced by a soldier whose only requirement of Hedwig was that he undergo a sex change operation. Unfortunately, the operation was botched, leaving Hedwig without anything resembling a penis or a vagina. Yeah. Yeah. Seriously, she's hearing this for the first time. But instead of a penis or a vagina, he has a 1-inch mound of flesh, which is referenced in the show's title. The story of Hedwig's tragic life is told to the audience by Hedwig herself between songs. And I'm going to note that I am referring to Hedwig as herself because I'm guessing from the way Hedwig presents herself that she prefers to be referred to as a lady. And it's always been my policy if
she
somebody's
boobs?
Name... What?
She have boobs?
I guess. I don't know. I didn't ask. But, I mean, you know, they have boob area. My policy has always been if somebody's like, hey, I used to be named John, but I like to be called Johnny now, I'm going to call them Johnny. It's not super complicated. So Hedwig's life is, like, of course, super tragic, and she's telling this, and she's played by actor J.J. Parkey, who, along with Ruthie Stevens, who plays Hedwig's husband, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Yitzhak. They're the only two characters in the play who actually speak. This isn't Sparky's first time wearing Hedwig's high heels. His comfort in the role is obvious from the very second he sets foot in the auditorium. He actually had this really great entrance, like this really, like, you know, epic sort of comes in from the back of the auditorium sort of entrance, and, you know, lights are on him, and it was so great, and this is very embarrassing. I thought, oh, yeah, we're supposed to stand and applaud. So I stood, and I was like, and then I looked around, and I realized I was the only person standing. It was super awkward, and what made it worse is he saw me. So he walks up to me as Hedwig, so I, and I'm like, oh, crap. I'm censoring myself. I don't know why. Ruth has been dropping F-bombs and S-bombs everywhere, but for the children who have listened up to this point. But, so I'm like, oh, crap. He's gonna say something. He's gonna make fun of me. And then I'd feel bad. But he didn't. He just leaned forward and kissed me on the cheek, which, you know, it told me that, oh, he's, like, totally ready for anything to, like, surprise him. He's going to try to interact with the audience. All right. And then he strolls up in the audience, and he proceeds to own. Like, Parky is a phenomenal performer. This is a very, very, it's sort of a loosely put together show in that it's a lot of it seems to be improvised, and a lot of it is he's, you know, communicating with the audience, he's telling the story of this person's life, but it is a lot of like humor and humor about current events. Man, did he make fun of Pat McCrory. There's a thing where he's trying to encourage people to pee in bottles and throw them at the governor's house, and Ruth, I want to point out, this has to be pointed out, after I said he makes fun of Pat McCrory, she pulls out her phone and immediately starts trying to figure out who Pat McCrory is.
I'm not from here.
Okay. But yeah, it's a very sort of improvised, very sort of, you know, it fills seat of your pants, and I think the director did a phenomenal job sort of making this show feel sort of, it feels like it is guerrilla theater that's sort of anything can happen. A monkey could jump out of somebody's ass and jump on stage and start throwing feces, and Hedwig would probably have a really clever quip. I think that it feels very alive, and I will say that if I were to struggle to find a fault in the performance, it's that it is so showy and so much of a performance that this character is a tragic, but horrible things that happen to this character throughout her life, and sometimes it feels a little too much like, is this really a tragic? Is this person being honest about how they're feeling, or are they putting on a show? And
sorry to interrupt. So do you mean that, like, the way it's written, it doesn't allow for the audience enough time to feel the tragic part? Or do you think it was just the way the actors and the directors chose to do that mm-hmm. particular show?
I think that it is very tough to say whether or not it is how it is written, because obviously it is written so that it is basically Hedwig telling her own story as if she is at one of her own concerts, like, you know, speaking to the audience. And it's difficult to do that and then have, like, these really tragic moments and have them still natural, because you have to think, well, isn't Hedwig doing this show, like, every night? It is partially the writing, and I think maybe it has to do with the acting. I think Ruthie Stevens, who plays Hedwig's husband, as mentioned earlier, I think some of it is, like, even though she has lines, and she actually has some solos and some beautiful solos, she's a terrific singer, much of what she does feels sort of like a Charlie Chaplin type thing. A lot of her communicating is through, like, expressions and body, yeah, and body language, and sometimes when you do that, that requires a lot of indicating. When you do a lot of indicating, then it can look a little phony and look a little too showy.
A little campy.
Yeah,
not a fan of the indicating.
Yeah, but all in all, this was a terrific performance. I do want to mention that the set was, they had to follow a Ring of Fire immediately of the show. So what they did was kind of clever. They took the Ring of Fire set and just spray painted it with German, like graffiti, and they like had some puns in there, like Grand Ole Opry was spray painted with Grand Old Orgy. It was clever. I do want to mention the name of the person who did this set design. That is David Rollins. So kudos, Mr. Rollins.
Good job, David.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I am a big believer that set design is a huge part of really great shows.
That helps the actors too.
Yeah,
for sure.
And the lighting designer, David Castaneda, and I've spoken about him in old past reviews. I've only spoken to the guy maybe three or four times throughout my time in this community, and I've never expressed to him just how ridiculously talented this guy is. He's just does really amazing job in lighting, and it felt like a rock concert, which I'm guessing was what they were going for, and they did a really great job. I also should mention that the music director, who is named Andrea, and I'm looking for her name. I should have prepared this beforehand. I have it written down, but
ladies and gentlemen, this is all happening right now, live from the campus of FTCC. James fumbling around on his phone, trying to figure out what the f*** he's supposed to be saying right now. Sorry, Andrea. Have we figured out Andrea's last name yet?
Andrea Dreyer.
Andrea Dreyer? I've heard so many awesome things about her.
Wow.
She's fantastic.
Well,
way to go, Andrea.
Well, she did the music direction. She did a really great job. And you know, these songs are very, they sound like something you could very easily hear on a radio. Oftentimes when you hear about a rock musical, the songs don't really sound like, you know, you'd ever hear them on the radio. They did a really terrific job of that. Now, I will say that, the costume designs, I thought somewhat they were a little over the top. It looked like they may have raided a Hot Topic. But for the most part, I have to say that I can't recommend this show enough. It is a guaranteed blast, assuming that you aren't squeamish when it comes to such subject matters. If you are, I can understand. If you are, you'll be happy to know that this season, which happened to open with Avenue Q and is closing of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, next season, it looks like they are doing something far more restrained. So those who are more squeamish can look forward to that.
Was it like Our Town?
I forget exactly what they're doing next season, but I remember thinking, oh, less wearing, that's for sure. So that's that. So I guess if I'm going to give that 4 out of 5 inches.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a penis joke.
Oh, you didn't need to explain it, but yeah.
Well, that's for all the kids listening. They're like, what's that mean?
Oh, okay. That's so cool. You know, I want to get to our interview with Brian, but because I know so few of you know Ruth, and obviously you've heard me occasionally through Lynn's podcast, I wanted to ask Ruth a few quick questions, because I know a lot of you are not super familiar with her, and, you know, I am, because I've known her for a very long time.
I've been out of the game for a while, Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting back, though.
Yeah. When I first met Ruth, I believe, what was it, 1982, 80?
Are you making an old joke, because my name's Ruth, and I should really be 90 years old?
No, but she does make a good point. She has the name of an old woman, Ruth Goldstein.
It's a name I can grow into.
An old Jewish lady.
An old Jewish lady.
I met her about probably 2008, and we've been very close since. So I'm going to ask her a few quick questions. So Ruth.
Hi.
Hi. Can you tell me a little bit about your background?
In theater.
In the theater.
In the theater.
When you're really fancy, you pronounce it without the T entirely. Hyata.
Hyata. Well, there's two T's. Which T am I not?
The first.
Hyata.
Hyata. Hyata.
Hyata.
We're going to edit this part out.
I think it's kind of funny. It says a lot about me. I started doing performing arts when I was just a wee little baby of probably 2 or 3, whenever I could start moving around.
What?
Oh, seriously. I was in dance class at like 2 years old.
That's like,
I was hyper. So my mom was like, what can I do to calm this girl down?
That's what parents give kids drugs. They don't like put them on a stage.
Drugs. It was natural. Whatever. Anyway, so I danced and did modeling a little bit when I was a kid. And that led me into going to some musicals and some plays. And I was like, I like that. I want to be up on stage. I like that spotlight. So that's started getting into theater in middle school and high school, and then one thing led to another, and then I started auditioning for community theater stuff, and this is when I was in Florida, so this is pre-North Carolina days. And then I went to college in North Carolina, and that's where it all pretty much started.
So what are you crinkling? I hear a crinkling.
Oh, that's
are you wearing
my
a
heel.
Diaper?
No, that's the heel of my foot on this brick wall.
Wow.
I'm not 90.
Okay.
This is my Depends.
Okay.
No.
So you started doing theater in college, and I understand that you've done a lot of really great shows. You did Our Town.
I did do Our Town. That was super fun. That was one of my first shows at UNCP, I think. Our Town. I did lots of musicals. I did scenes from Chicago, which is one of my favorites. Mm. Once Upon a Mattress. I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. It's another pretty good one.
Yeah.
And
you've done some Shakespeare as well.
I've done some Shakespeare. I didn't have the opportunity to do a lot of it in college, but I did a lot in high school, middle school.
What the hell is that sound?
I don't know.
We are recording outdoors, which was Ruth's idea, but it's
so pretty outside.
Yeah, it is. There's a puddle. There's a dead guy over there.
There's a water bug right there. Look, let's interview him.
There's an insect.
Let's see how his life is going. Come here, little guy. But so yeah, I went to school for theater, and then I got out of school, and then it kind of sucked because then life hits you in the face and you got to get a real job. And I got out of the theater game for a while, for about 9 years, and now I'm back in it.
Yeah. So, and she is in it to win it. She's very
yeah.
I'm going to speak as a because she can't say this about herself, because obviously people would be like, oh my god, she's what an egomaniac. I mean, she is. She's
pretty much.
Enormous ego.
I know what I'm good at.
She's 80% ego. She's just an ego with legs and arms.
A good 90.
And really short arms.
Like a T-Rex. But like
yes.
A really f***ing confident T-Rex.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to have to change the rating on this on iTunes to explicit.
Sorry, I can't. You told me it'd just be me.
Okay. Well, Ruth is a,
This is my first time, guys. It's my first time recording a podcast or whatever this is.
I wanted to say, Ruth is an excellent, like, one of the best performers I've gotten a chance of seeing live. She's an amazing singer, she's an amazing actress. You put a script in front of her, she does amazing things. So
it's the whole package, pretty much.
Yeah,
so if you're listening out there and you need an actor,
mm-hmm.
hit me up.
Triple threat.
Yep.
She's probably got a fourth threat in there, in that she owns an AR.
I can't tell
like
you.
She owns.
I'd have to kill you.
Yeah, she owns like weaponry, but she's all the threats, and she's spiky. She's like, she has ability to like, you know, make all her edges super spiky. But normally, you know, she's not like spiky. But if in an emergency situation, she can make spikes pop out. It's very, it's
Sonic the Hedgehog-y.
Yes, it's you know, unfortunately, she
That's
doesn't
what
have
my
the speed.
Name was.
Sonic
the Hedgehog.
Yeah, yeah. So now we're going to move on to a interview with. The one, the only, I'm Brian Adam Klein. And then we will come right back to this space. Take it away, James! are actually, we've relocated, hence the change in sound. We've got an air conditioner going in the background. We are at the Gilbert Theater right now in downtown Fayetteville. And we are here with, as mentioned earlier, Brian Adam Klein, who is the director of the Vagina Monologues.
Hey, everybody.
And he's actually been here at the theater working for hours painting the stage. Tell me about the show. It's opening June 3rd, and it's running to June 12th.
Okay, well, the Vagina Monologues was written in early to mid-90s by Eve Ensler. It is a collection of monologues. We are actually using an edition that we got from a local bookstore, and it consists of comedic and dramatic monologues. They deal with all different kinds of issues that happen worldwide, to things that happen nationally, to things that actually are occurring in North Carolina right now.
Right. This version of the Vagina Monologues, I don't know how much you want to talk about that, but it is very relevant to what's going on, politically speaking, in North Carolina right now. And the Vagina Monologues doesn't seem like the place you would normally expect to hear this issue raised, but...
It's interesting how we're jumping right into that one. Yes, well, first of all, the Vagina Monologues traditionally is with a cast of women. And I had thoughts about a transgender character, trans person character, early on, after I was assigned the project last year. And I looked and looked and looked, could not find a local actor or... and I wanted a transgender person to play that character, and just couldn't find someone locally without bringing somebody in and making the show cost a lot of money. And so I'm on Facebook one day, and I get a message from Matt Lamb, who's married to our artistic director, Robin Parrish, very talented actor locally, and you know, he's acted in Pittsburgh and all over the Northeast. And he actually Facebooked me and said that he wanted to be in Vagina Monologues, and I was like, huh, all right. So I did a little bit of digging, and I found that Eve Ensler had actually written a monologue as a response to a college that was shut down. Their Vagina Monologues show was actually shut down from administration because they had a cast that was all transgender. And so in response, she wrote this monologue. And I said, well, if she wrote a monologue, then we have to do it. And so Matt came on board, and we, you know, Matt is a straight man, but we went for the best next thing, and that was a talented actor that could portray that type of character. In his monologue, the monologue is 3 or 4 minutes long, but it addresses so many issues that a trans person would be going through, from growing up to finding who they are. Really, just in that 4 minutes, you really can learn and experience what someone that is born in the wrong body, what issues that they might go through, through the whole life. I'm not going to tell you, what happens in the climax of the monologue, but, I definitely think that it's something that everyone should see. It's a monologue that, even when Vagina Monologues was done, 10 years ago, that Gilbert did it at the Arts Council and at the Cameo Art House Theater. That monologue has never been done here because it's so new. And we decided to do that because Eve Ensler said that this play, you know, after the incident where she decided to do this monologue, she said, this show is not necessarily about women. This is about people that have vaginas. And if you have a vagina, then, you know, that's what it's about. Mm. So that was a strong, I feel that that was a really strong, important choice on my decision and on the theater's decision as well.
Now speaking of women who do have a majority share of the vaginas.
Yes.
This cast, the women on this cast, it's sort of a remarkable. If you know you're familiar with the theater scene here at all, you've probably seen any number of these women in shows.
Oh yes, we have a enormously talented group of women in this show. We have women that have done the vagina monologues before in different venues. Nikki Hart, she's a local actress, has worked at CFRT as well as the Gilbert, and Rhonda Baraki and Joyce Leib, who was actually in the original Gilbert show. I believe Rhonda was as well. Nikki was in the FSU, Fayetteville State University version. We have a great...
It's just a great cast all in all. I think...
We have some new folks that have joined us, as well as people that have been here at the Gilbert before. Kaylee Morrison... Mary McGee, Amy Cox, Deanna Robinson, Liz Covington, and Kylie Grace Mask. And Eudora Forbes as well. Forgot about her.
Oh, yes. Yes,
can't forget about her.
So now I got a chance to sit on the preview, like I mentioned earlier, and it's a very unique take, I feel, on the vagina monologues.
Yeah, I think so. When I came aboard, I knew that I did not want to do a show that was women that are standing with folders and just reading the monologues. I think that's cool and everything, but we are the Gilbert Theater, and we, you know, we put on plays. We memorize lines, and then we find a way to create that character and to find the objective and to push through it. And it was very important to me that this would be a journey as opposed to little sections of characters that are kind of isolated. You know, and
I am really looking forward to actually seeing this show with an audience. I think people should definitely check this out. It's a very, you know, unique experience.
Well, I want to add too, Nikki Hart plays kind of like an Eve Ensler sort of essence of her that kind of guides the audience through this journey of these women. And I think that that's one thing that makes it very, unique, that it's actually, you know, has a central, sort of like just, we described it that she was kind of like the Clarence of the vagina monologue world of the universe, you know, like It's a Wonderful Life. He kind of
perfect pitch.
Guides the audience through the story, and I really wanted that to be an important part.
We are
of this.
Back, and Ruth is sweating profusely because she is nervous.
Yeah.
And Jewish.
Yeah, lots of men should see
Jewish.
The show.
Yeah,
and
Jewish.
Jewish
lesbians.
Little Jewish.
Oh, yeah,
she's got a Jewy center. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking out the time.
Thank you, listeners, and I hope that you come to the show. It starts June 3rd through June the 12th, and you can get tickets at GilbertTheater.com.
She's a little nervous, but she's doing all right.
And the box office number
So we are back, and I want to thank Brian for sitting through that interview.
I
want to thank those who remained awake during that interview.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. And
I want to thank Ruth, of course, for being here, and hopefully she'll be here next week as well. And I want to thank you guys for listening. But most of all, I want to thank Lynn Pryor for all he's done for the theater community and for all he's done for me personally. He's a really, really amazing guy, and we're going to miss him. And now, to play you out, Ruth is going to sing a beautiful song. I did not prepare her for this at all. But she's always ready. She's looking at me. She's stretching her singing muscles. She's about to get ready. She's going to blow us all away. This beautiful.
I'm going to sing.
All right.
Singing, dude.
All right. Well, we will we'll catch you all next week. Go see a play. And until next week, I forget what Lynn's normal sign-off thing is. I will re-record that later.
And that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Thank you.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where the boys all